Hey, Doc Danny here, and I just want to say thank you for listening to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. If you want to get involved in the conversation and get your questions answered and feedback from myself and 1,500 other people within the PT Entrepreneur community, head over to Facebook and join the PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group. This is a great group for anybody that is in business or thinking about going into business for themselves and wants the support of other people like me and other practitioners out there that are entrepreneurs. So guys, thanks for listening. Enjoy this episode.
So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.
What's up, guys? Doc Danny here, and I got my buddy Quinn Henoch with me. It's Henoch, right? Not Henoch.
It's probably either. It's German, so it's probably a lot rougher than either one of those. It's probably like Henoch or something.
Is it
like
really?
That.
German?
Like, yeah.
Because I get this a lot. My last name sucks, but I usually butcher names. So anyway, I'm going to call you, we'll say Henoch. That probably sounds perfect. A little softer around the edges. But if you don't know who Quinn is, man, you're living under a rock. He's been absolutely just adding a ton of value to our profession, especially in the performance realm. And is somebody that I've had a chance to interview before on the Doc and Jock podcast back in the day. This was, you know, when you and Joe got to go deep on weightlifting technique and all kinds of cool stuff. And then I got a chance to catch up with you at the Clinical Athlete live event you guys did in Asheville a couple years ago. And it's just been fun to be able to watch your kind of career evolve and the things that you've gotten into along the way. And I'm really excited just to chat with you about business in particular, because I feel like every time I hear you on a podcast, it's talking about like research or weightlifting, and which are both awesome, don't get me wrong, but I think there's a lot more there on the back end that people don't really know about with all the stuff that you're doing. So first of all, man, dude, thanks so much for your time and committing to chat with us today.
Thank you for having me. You know, this is kind of, I would say, almost out of my comfort zone talking business. It's probably a reason that you only ever hear me talk about rehab or weightlifting.
Amazing.
You know, it's kind of staying in my lane, but I'm excited, man. I appreciate you having me.
Well, you know, I think sometimes it's funny. I had this conversation with Brett Bartholomew recently. He lives in Atlanta, and he's become a pretty good friend of mine about strength coaches and strength coaches sort of having difficulty with business and developing a business for themselves. They feel it's a field that's all about service, and there shouldn't be any monetary association with that. Like they should get paid like shit. They should be there all the time. They should not see their kids. And that's just the way it is. And he's like, dude, it doesn't have to be that way, you know? And so sometimes you almost like fall into an entrepreneurship role because of things that you just want to do in life. And it sounds like that's kind of what happened with you. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we can say we're entrepreneurs, but I feel like if you can go off and do your own thing, but if you are chained to that thing, that's no better than being, you know, having a boss or doing the thing that you wish that you had broken off of. It's like, oh, I want to start my own gym. And then you start your own gym and you're like, God, I'm in the gym for 18 hours a day. And, you know, so it's like the same thing. It's definitely what I, what drove me to branch off a little bit. Right off the bat out of school, I started my own cash-based practice. And so it was kind of like just learning as I go. But it's funny when you mention, we think that these service-based professions shouldn't make money. It's like, okay, training, rehab, yes, we're serving the population and we're serving our athletes and our patients. But is a restaurant not a service-based business? Accountants are serving their clients. They make plenty of money. So it is just weird perception that we feel bad for helping people get healthy. If anything, we should be put on a pedestal in some regard for that, because we're hopefully helping to improve life, you know, quality of life in these types of things.
I 100% agree. I mean, I think everybody in our profession would agree with that statement. And the challenge is the mindset around what I've found is physical therapy draws people that inherently like to help other people. And if there was no need to make money, they would actually do it. I mean, they would love to do it for free. It's what we would do no matter what. It's just the profession that we sort of fall into, and it's what we enjoy. So they almost feel bad about charging for something that they would do for free because they just want to be able to help people, you know, and that's a superpower in some ways, but it's your kryptonite as well. When you really look at the fact that if you don't value yourself, how do you expect other people to do so? And that is a challenge. Have you had issues where you've had to kind of work on your mindset of, in particular, cash practice, where you're like, man, I am worth $200 an hour or whatever when you see somebody?
100%. I still work on that. I would, in the beginning, that was absolutely my biggest weakness. You could see, like, I had my prices on the website, but I hated whenever people would ask me at the end of a session, all right, how much do I owe you? Because then I would have to say it. Right. And there were times where I would, they know how much it costs because they came in, they saw it on my website. So they're just, you know, asking the question because they're used to, you know, how much I owe you, that type of thing. There were times where I said a cheaper price. I panicked. This is right out of school. I panicked. Yeah. I said a cheaper price because I felt exactly what you said. I felt bad for charging them for something that I would have done for free, especially if the session was, you know, it was a more difficult case and it was harder to make progress. I felt bad because they weren't quote unquote fixed right from the beginning. So it is 100% been a problem for me. And you know, just kind of that evolution, I've gotten much more confident, I think, or at least understand that my value is perceived as that, you know, it's how I portray the value. And people kind of pick up on that, you know, and if you devalue yourself, even with things that are non-tangible, just your body language or just your tone of voice, that type of thing, people pick up on that. And I've really tried to work on it.
That's such a good point, man. Like the intangibles these are teachable things, right? Like this is stuff we work on with our staff, PTs. And I remember, you know, when I first started, I feel it's very similar to you, man. Like I remember I got strong armed by this guy one time. He's like a commercial realtor and he's just does deals all the time. I wouldn't say strong arm. He just sort of swindled me. He knew what it cost. It was like $175 for a visit is where we started. And when we got done, he pulled out $120 in cash out of his pocket. And he was like, well, I'm going to pay you in cash. And since it's cash, I figure, you know, it's going to be a discount. So how's $120 sound? And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, and I, you know what, dude, I saw that guy probably once every couple of weeks for like the next 6 months. And I never said anything to him about like, okay, I can't do this anymore, because he was like, he was so good at just like positioning himself into place. And also, frankly, I would have taken $120. I didn't, at that point in time, like I was trying to just buy diapers. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I would have done it, but I look back on it and I'm like, damn, that guy Ninja, you know, swindled me with cash and easily could tell that I wasn't confident in what I was doing. So, you know, I feel like for you, is there anything that you've done like formally or books you've read or any like resources that you think were very helpful for you to develop that mindset? Because it is such a big problem for younger practitioners going into business.
You know, I think that I've taken some courses on things like time management and communication, I think is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. The book, The E-Myth, I read probably 4 years ago when I first started this thing. Yeah. And that kind of revolutionized my thinking a little bit. But I tell you what's helped the most is reading up on communication. So there's a couple books. One is which is called Difficult Conversations. The other one's called Difficult Confrontations. There's a third one that's Difficult Discussions. Those three, I think I might be butchering the last title, but they are the whole point is how do you not potentially diffuse situations, but how do you have rebuttals where it can be a win-win, but you don't get in that situation exactly what you talked about. You don't get talked down from where you stand.
Right.
Either both parties are leveled up or there's no deal, that type of thing. So I think that learning about communication has been the biggest thing for me. Also just growing up a little bit and being more confident in what I bring to the table. And I'll tell you what, we're not going to talk much clinical here, but becoming more confident in what I can bring to the table clinically has actually helped me become more confident in financial endeavors. Because back in the day when I was a new grad, I wasn't confident really in anything that I was doing or saying, and then felt bad for charging people because I felt like a child, you know, and a small fish in a big pond. So I think it's just been a combination of a lot of things over the course of time that have helped me in that regard.
Well, I think it's a common kind of like imposter syndrome belief when you first get out of school. You know, when I got out of school, I didn't go, there's no way in hell I would have gone straight into a cash practice. You know, I couldn't have. I owed the Army 4.5 years. So even if I wanted to, I couldn't have. But the reality was, from a confidence standpoint, a skill set standpoint, I don't think I would have even been able to do it. I probably didn't feel like I would have been able to, you know, really be good enough to where I had enough confidence to do that until probably like a year out or so. And I see that a lot with newer grads as well. Like 1 to 2 years out, they tend to sort of hit their stride. They're still, you know, up on relevant research. They're really motivated. They've got, and in particular, if they have a background in a specific niche, you know, like your experience with weightlifting was really helpful because, yeah, you may have been like a newer PT, but if you had a background in weightlifting specifically and you knew that sport really well, all of a sudden now like you have an expertise in this one thing and you layer on this other, you know, variable on top of it. So the niche is helpful as can be, but you know, for you, the cash practice came first, and then what happened next? What was the next thing you sort of delved into in terms of, you know, kind of working on a side project that turned into another element of the business?
Yeah. Well, real quick, before I forget, those book, Crucial Conversations.
Crucial. Okay, cool.
Crucial Accountability, and then Difficult Conversations. Those are the three books that I've read so far on those things. But I think it was the seminars, and it was the online, it was creating content. So when I graduated from physical therapy, I got real lucky. And this is the big thing. Well, you know, luck, opportunity meets preparation, these types of things. Yep. But I made a lot of great connections in physical therapy school because I traveled for all of my in clinical rotations. And I also would, on the weekends, go to different gyms and network with people. And that has helped me tremendously. So when I got out of physical therapy school, a couple things happened where I made connections with a company called Juggernaut Training Systems. Mm-hmm. So I built a relationship with Chad Wesley Smith and Juggernaut, and I started to do online content with them, which evolved into doing seminars where he'd be like, oh, I can't pay you, but I'll fly you out and you can speak at the seminar and be kind of like a guest, you know, expert guest, that type of thing. And then that turned into, I'll pay you this time, you know, and that kind of then turned into, well, you're kind of going to be a keynote guy, you know? So it was just like an evolution. And then I'm sure we'll get into this, but you know, that's kind of what spawned Clinical Athlete. Is I was blessed with this platform already from these various entities and, you know, so the seminar thing really, really helped because I had the clinical practice that was still very small. I was working at a insurance-based, more traditional thing, also part-time to supplement that. But then I started the seminar thing, and that's what really catalyzed everything because you can just touch and reach so many more people that way. So I think that really, really helped.
So Clinical Athlete, it sounds like, it started with in-person education stuff, networking, doing content with this gym that has a solid, you know, strength and or a solid social media platform to begin with, which is awesome, right? So you get your ideas in front of a lot of people that frankly need it. Like the powerlifting community is really, you know, at the time in particular, when you're putting some of these really solid piece of content out, it's like ripe for it. You know, it's very like old school when you apply some of this sort of like movement methodology on top of it and newer research, and all of a sudden it's like, damn, this guy a ninja? You know, this is amazing. Like if people are feeling better, they're training more, and that stuff was a really solid change, and it's still happening, right? So Clinical Athlete, it seemed like, was okay, there's more than just me out there. There's this sort of like hybrid role that is developing, and it's happening more and more and more. And you know, I've seen it develop over the last 8-9 years since I've gotten out of school, and it's really awesome to see. I think it's actually the most exciting thing in our profession. And Clinical Athlete sounds like was your idea of like trying to connect these people. Is that right?
Absolutely. So that idea, Clinical Athlete, the idea of that, just having clinicians that understand athletes, having a network of that type of clinician, that was an idea I had even in PT school. Yeah. Because I knew what I wanted to do. And I was like, and I knew there were other clinicians like that, kind of that hybrid coach clinician. I was like, it would be really cool if there were just a pool of those types of things. And then that was an idea. I didn't think about it for 2 or 3 years. But when I started to build my own practice and then also be working with Juggernaut and doing the seminars and all these things, I started to think that was an actual real idea that we could bring back to the table and make it a thing. So the summer of 2016, I was like 15, summer 2015, I started getting on the phone. We sent an email blast out. Again, Juggernaut was very, very helpful. And they sent an email for me to their 80,000 subscriber email list and say, hey, we're starting, Quinn Hennick is starting this clinical athlete network. If you're a clinician who works with athletes and you walk the walk, these types of things, shoot us an email and you know, get future updates. And so I spent an entire summer, me and my business partner, on the phone with clinicians from all over the world, telling them about this thing that we were going to launch in the fall of 2015. And so we started those connections that I had made, or at least they were leads because they were following us already.
Right.
And so it was like, hell yeah, we want to join this movement type of thing. So we had a nice bunch of people when we launched Clinical Athlete in 2015 already on the map and just ready to do this thing. And it evolved quickly into a directory of clinicians who for athletes to connect with them, athlete, instead of just searching Google randomly, you get a clinician that understands your performance goals, and that evolved very quickly into a forum where now we have clinicians, students, strength and conditioning coaches, trainers, all kind of discussing and sharing resources and ideas related to these two worlds, because the field is just starved for something like that. So it really just evolved organically, but it was easy in the sense that everybody wanted that. And it was a very easy sell.
So when you started the platform off, how many clinicians were part of this? And then what's the growth been like today? Like, how many clinicians do you have in Clinical Athlete?
Yeah, it's been, we launched the website with 50, and we are very, very selective, almost to a fault, on who we put on the directory. There's a bit of a process to it. And that's kind of the point of it from the very beginning. So we have about 200 on the map right now. You have to go through an application process, and then you have to go through a forum initiation where you are required to start conversation and to post research and discuss said research on the forum before you go on to the directory. We do that to differentiate ourselves from any other directory out there that's just pay to play. Now in our forum, we've got, I think, up to 650 members, something like that. But you know, that's an educational platform. It's back end. It's private discussions, these types of things. So we've actually been very, very selective with who we put on our directory, because those are brand ambassadors for us. And you know, we take the public's perception very seriously. So if we get feedback, you know, sometimes we get negative feedback. Most of the time it's great, but sometimes it's negative feedback from a clinician on the map. We have conversations with that clinician. Hey, what happened? You know, because there's always two sides, but the quality control has been really, really important, because from a business standpoint, the directory itself is not the only, we can afford to do that because the quality is more important, because we've got the forum membership, we've got the seminars that we do, the online courses that we do. So we've got all these avenues where we can keep something a little bit more stringent and as important.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. You know, and the business model is interesting. So break that down a little bit. So the primary revenue drivers for this, because this is a 100% pretty much online business. I guess you guys do in-person events or teaching kind of engagements and stuff. But the nuts and bolts of it are primarily online. So, you know, of those different revenue streams within the business, what makes up the majority of, you know, Clinical Athlete in order to keep the business running and worth your time?
Yeah, the membership, the forum membership is the main driver. And that's the most time for me. It's like the most time, what am I putting the most time into? That should be the thing that's bringing back the most return.
Yeah.
And it's definitely the forum where we're posting all of our webinars and online courses and discussions and research, and all of those things go into the forum. So we're trying to build that. And you know, we talk about numbers here. There's students are allowed in that thing, trainers, and I mean, the pool is big.
Yeah.
So that's definitely been the main driver. And then the seminars, I mean, seminars are great. You know, they can be great, and they can be a real pain in the ass. I got into the business of seminars first as just a presenter. So I'm like, yeah, you fly me out, I'll just talk. You fly me back, cool.
Yeah.
You know, that's easy. But then when you start organizing seminars, especially weekend courses or two-day courses, multiple speaker events, hotel arrangements, oh my gosh, it's it's unbelievable all the little things that, that come into play. So that's been a learning process for us. Definitely is the seminar game. And what I found is what we started to evolve into is figuring out what content people want live, what they value live, and what they value what they can just watch in their living room in their pajamas and, right. and, you know, earn CEUs. And we've learned now that, you know, courses that are all just lecture that could easily be watched online, those tend to not do as well. Our weightlifting course and soon to be launched powerlifting clinical athlete certification does really, really well because we're doing, you know, right. we're lifting the whole time. So we've learned that the seminars are a big driver for us, but they are, it's constant work. So with a seminar, you get the lump sum of the attendees, but if you don't follow up, if you don't keep those attendees in the funnel, and I think that's a mistake that a lot of people make, then seminars are kind of like a one and done thing, and they shouldn't be like that. You know, if you've got somebody who's bought your seminar, who's paid hundreds of dollars to come to your brand and learn from you, that is such a, that's such a hot brand ambassador. You have to foster those people. You have to keep them in the funnel and keep, so those people go into our forum and they get lots of perks and those types of things. So the seminars are kind of a long-term, can be a long-term driver for us because now we've got brand ambassadors all over the place, you know, that's still funneling ultimately to the forum.
You know, I'm interested to know what your week looks like because of all the different things that you have going on. Like how much time are you spending clinically? How much time are you spending teaching or developing courses? How much time are you spending on clinical athlete? Like what is most of the work week look like for you?
I said this earlier. It was like, well, you're not an entrepreneur if you're ball and chain to what you do. And then here I'm going to tell you about it, but I like it. I love it. So it's right. different, you know,
it's a whole other conversation we get into. I agree.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm up at 5 a.m. every day because everything is so stacked and kind of packed together. And I'm still trying to keep my weightlifting, like competitive weightlifting career myself up, which is like, I wish I didn't even care about that because that's such a physical and mental drain.
Right.
But so I'm in the clinic. I'm in my actual physical office, still seeing athletes on a clinical basis, on an hourly basis, 2 to 3 times a week right now. I try to pack them all in those 2 to 3 days so that I can just focus. Like I know if Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Wednesday, Thursday is a clinic day, I delete Instagram off my phone for that day. I don't check. I put an autoresponder on my email. I say today's a clinic day and I'm all clinic. I'm all, you know, clinician from that point. EMR, all the same day-to-day things. On the other days, I from that 5 a.m. wake-up call, I get up so early so that I can unfog my brain. And that may take me an hour and a half and where I just do nothing. I just kind of like prepare for the morning and like take a walk, listen to a podcast. When I feel clear, probably about 7 a.m. is where I've got this from Mark Fisher Fitness in New York City. I call it my magic time from about 7 to 11, 7 to 10, where is my creative time. So I am working on my presentations. I'm working on the second edition of the book. I'm working on blog posts or videos, these types of things. And then around 11 or 12 is when my brain gets a little muddy. And that's when I check email. And that's when I check all my notifications and look at some of my notifications from my online clients, that type of thing. And then I go train and then I come back and it's a little bit more magic time where I kind of fine tune, try to move forward projects that I'm doing. Afternoon is more of like conferences, meeting with some of the staff that we have, like our continuing education coordinator who helps with all the events and all the webinars, more email. And then just kind of like preparing some of the content that we're going to be posting throughout the week. So that's kind of my days are chunked. The morning is my time to move things, to really push projects forward, because that's when my brain is the most clear. And then the afternoon is kind of cleaning up loose ends and then preparing for the next day or the next morning or kind of planning things out for the week. So yeah, I'll stop there for.
I think that's, you, for as much as you're doing, that's pretty damn well organized. I mean, I think it's very hard to be introspective enough to understand when you get things done well and when you don't. And It's taken me a while to get to that same point. I wouldn't say I sort of figured that out until maybe like 2 years into our business. And it's interesting that now, like my wife knows, like, don't mess with me at this time. Not only that, but dude, I'm like super ultra specific about it. Like, I'll listen to the same song on repeat over and over again to put myself in the same place. And I know that during that time, it's just like, I am knocking out very detailed, tedious work that if I have to, you know, go and do something else, I lose that sort of flow state. And it's so productive. But what I would ask you, I think this is, you know, might be an interesting answer is, do you find that some of the most important things that you know you have to do are the hardest things for you to get yourself motivated to actually do, like chipping away at some of these big projects?
100%. That's why I have to delete Instagram off my phone. That's why I take measures for this, because I'm telling you right now, my brain is conditioned for these habits. As soon as something gets hard, what do I want to do? I want to reach for my phone. I want to check my email. So when I mentioned earlier that I was like, oh, I'll take time management courses, people are like, oh, you know, making lists and all that crap. Not really that. This one I took, Time Ninja from Mark Fisher Fitness in New York City. It was like, how to keep yourself from distraction during these time periods. So I do find that to be extremely difficult. I keep my phone in my car in the morning. I put it in my trunk. And I walk up to my office. I have two offices. That's another thing. I have one office for admin. Nobody can touch me here. And then I have my other clinic office, which is 30 minutes up the road. And so my admin office, I'm completely alone. That's where I am now. I leave my phone in my car. I take, I have this app called Boomerang, which doesn't give me emails until a certain time of the day. And I don't open my browsers. And the night before, I have like prepared my computer and all of the things so I can just sit. I can come into my office. It's all there. And I can just get into a flow state as soon as possible. It's really just all about taking the distractions away. I don't force it. When I start to feel myself, even, you know, no electronic distractions there, I start to tend my brain starting to wander off. I get up and I take a walk. And I try to just collect my thoughts. And that's maybe every hour, 45 minutes to an hour, I'll get up, take a 5 minute walk around the block and come right back. But it is extremely, extremely difficult. But if you schedule, you know, making lists is one thing, but scheduling times, this is going to be done by this time. Having your business partners keep you accountable. Hey, you know, hey Derek, tell me when, by this time tomorrow, I want you to shoot me a text or an email and ask me if I've got this thing done. Because, you know, you just got to have some accountability buddies there to help you out. It is a habit, though, that you can create just like anything else. If you just do it and are consistent with it for a little bit, it gets so much easier.
Well, if anybody's listening to this and you wonder to yourself, how do you actually get shit done? Like, and people reach out to me and they're like, I feel like I've spun my wheels all the time. And as soon as we talk to them, it's like, dude, you're trying to do everything at once. This idea of multitasking is silly. Like, it's been proven it doesn't work. You're just distracting yourself from these different things. And I mean, you go to the measure of like taking your phone and putting it in your trunk of your car. Like, let's put that in perspective. Like, you understand yourself enough it's that easy for you to get distracted with something that's sort of mindless. And there's a time and a place for that. You can't be in that state all the time. I mean, it would ruin you. You wouldn't be able to have any sort of relationship with anybody, you know, in the world. You wouldn't have any, like, you wouldn't want to listen to anybody. You wouldn't want to have a conversation. Like, you would just be so mentally fatigued. So, you know, when you ask yourself, like, okay, how does this guy have time to have a practice and teach seminars and write a book and have this online business? Like, you just described how it happens. And I get people all the time and they're like, oh man, I really want to do X, Y, and Z. But if you're not honestly willing to listen to what Quinn just described and think to yourself, do you have the resiliency to do that? Not for one day, but do that for years. And if the answer is not yes, then you need to figure something else out to do, because the reality is, if it was that easy, everybody would have their own course and have written their own book and have done all these things, you know? So, you know, for you, it sounds like you sort of got this stuff dialed in the most, but what is, I mean, the goal, you've said it yourself, is not to just be ball and chained to this. The E-Myth approach, I think, is amazing. And you know, I've been able to work myself out of my practice to where I see 8 patients a week. That's it. And it's awesome. I love it. I go into clinic days and I'm like ready to go. I'm like a caged pit bull ready to, like, you know, fix somebody's back or whatever. And, It's really fun. But what's the goal for you? Like, where do you want to bring clinical athlete? Like, where do you want this to evolve to?
That's a really good question. And people ask me that all the time. And, you know, my vision, it was creating change in the education, you know, end goal. I don't know if I have one, if I'm going to be completely honest. I mean, end goal is to create a change. And I want to see influence in the curriculum. You know, I'm biased towards physical therapy because that's our background and that's, sure, you know, that type of thing. But I want to see not just people saying, yeah, and giving thumbs up on Instagram. I want to see this type of thing actually go into curriculums. And what's been so cool is we have forum members and clinical athlete directory members who in the last 2 or 3 years, I've watched this happen. They're putting strength and conditioning courses in physical therapy curriculums. They're going and doing seminars to schools, and they're reaching students, and it's starting to trickle up higher and higher up into the professions, you know, in both sides. Strength and conditioning is becoming more akin to injury management within their scope, of course, but that's the goal for me. And so all these little projects are honestly just to foster change. And it happens to be that they can be monetized, and I enjoy doing it because their topics happen to be my passion and in these types of things. So I got to tell you, man, I don't know if there is an end goal. You know, all these little projects, I always have like definition of done. What does it mean to have this webinar? What does done mean? And I have all these guidelines. Oh, it's posted here. It's done this. It's here, here, here. I don't know if I have a definition of done for clinical athlete. I think if I did, it would have lost its, you know, its vision.
Well, I think when you really like what you do, it doesn't really feel like work, you know? And
yeah,
there's a lot of, you know, you get a lot of gratification from it. And I mean, I'm friends with a lot of business owners in Atlanta. I'm involved with a like local entrepreneurs group, with a few hundred business owners in, and have a lot of friends that have sold businesses. And I can tell you, selling a business and then trying to figure out what you want to do after that is actually a very, very challenging thing to go through. And I've seen a lot of negative things associated with, it sounds weird. You get all this money. You really don't have to do anything the rest of your life. You decide, I'm going to pick up golf, and that lasts for like 2 weeks. These are not the kind of people that just play golf, you know, like they built companies and sold them, right? So they get upset, they get frustrated. They feel like they're not, you know, getting what they need in life. They're depressed. And I want nothing to do with that. You know, I think the ideal is, how do you move more and more away from the things that you don't really like and more towards the things that you really, really like and give you a lot of energy? So for you, like, what are those one or two things that you're like, man, if I could do this one or two things every day or most of my time during the week, what would it be?
Well, and first of all, that whole notion, like how to delegate, how to trim the fat, how to delete, how to not do, those have been the hardest things, but the most beneficial things for me to learn in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It's like where to focus my intent. If you look at really, you know, like multi-million dollar, billion dollar entrepreneurs, these types of things, they are really good at a few things and they suck at everything else because they don't care about that.
Right.
So that's, you know, that question that you're asking me. My ultimate passion is educating, helping to educate, being a part of education for educators. I love the courses because the seminars that we do with Clinical Athlete are coaches and clinicians. They are educators themselves. And I'm now talking to colleagues. That's my absolute passion. Obviously I love the clinic and I love my time with athletes, but I also love building programs and systems. Our weightlifting program, or our weightlifting gym here that my clinic is actually inside of, Southern California Weightlifting, we have 100 weightlifting only members. Snatch and Clininger. This is private. It's private business. This is people, 100 people that only want to come in here for the programming for the Snatch and Clininger. It's actually tremendous. I've never seen a gym like that. And we want to build coaching education systems, you know, these tiered approaches. You know, Equinox is a good example of a company that does that with their trainers. We want to build athlete systems with different grades and injury risk reduction programs and all these things. And that is what gets me. Like, I guess it's just touching large groups of people at a time. That's my passion. So I want to help to educate educators, and I want to build systems, sustainable systems for things like programming long-term, injury risk reduction, management long-term, staff, gym staff, education programs, you know, that can be over the course of many months, you know, 12-month education program or internship program, stuff like that. That's where my passion lies. The problem with all that stuff is it's extremely time consuming to put together.
Yeah.
And then it's extremely time consuming to implement because you're constantly tweaking and fine tuning and you don't necessarily get paid for all of that time. So it's figuring out how can I have all of these other things that we do running like clockwork, build a accountable, responsible team running that stuff. I'm just kind of like over here, overseeing and helping them do their job, you know, optimize that whole deal so that I can spend inordinate amounts of time on these other projects that don't necessarily pay all that well in the short term, but are my passion and could potentially grow into something huge that other people could use for years to come.
Yeah. You know, the way you describe stuff is really interesting. There's a book called Rocket Fuel. I don't know if you've ever read any of Gina Wickman's stuff, but are you familiar with him?
It's on my list. That book is on my wish list.
Okay, so when you read it, it's funny. So most people that start businesses are considered visionaries, and it's not. It sounds cooler than it is. It's just basically like people that are sort of like ADD and have a hard time. Like they're really like, oh, dude, I'll start this. They pull the trigger, ride the bullet kind of people. But what they don't do very well is integrate. And there's this other subgroup of people. There are not actually that many of them called integrators. And integrators sometimes get masked as visionaries when they have to start things. And when people start talking about systems and implementing structure and all this stuff, like a true visionary never says that ever. An integrator will say that. And what's interesting, you should read that book because you might be this like weird unicorn hybrid that they talk about someone that is an integrator. It's not that common that is having to function as a visionary. And then when they team up with somebody that is 100% visionary, that's what they call rocket fuel. So this idea of, you know, each person being able to take the tasks that they're really, really like uniquely good at, and then leverage that towards the same goal. And maybe you have somebody on your team like that, but I think it would be interesting for you to read that book. And you can even do an online assessment of this. It'll tell you what your score is. Maybe I'm totally wrong. You can let me know if you take the test, what you actually are. But I think it's very rare to hear people talk about systemization of stuff and have this idea of kind of like, hierarchy and tiers and things of that. So, dude, that is an incredibly powerful thing. And if you can harness that and you can make that work, you know, you can scale it to so many other gyms and leverage that. Like, I think that would be really, really cool. So, you know, here's what I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I do want to ask you one last question. And it's really, I think that there is a very growing subset of students that are interested in the more of the performance kind of PT approach, that are interested in doing their own thing to some degree. What advice would you go back and give, you know, a young Quinn Hinna coming out of school and say like, hey, listen, bro, make sure you do X, Y, and Z, you know, save you a bunch of time and energy and stress.
Yeah. I would say identify the passion. So if you want to have a clinic inside of a gym or you want to work with athletes or whatever that passion is, you have this vision. This isn't easy to do. So nobody is as interested in your vision as you are. So my advice is that take the pressure off of yourself. And what I mean by that is for me, for example, what I did was I had a job at a clinic that knew exactly what I was doing on the side. They were cool with it because they were a big company. They had like 50 clinics all over the state. They didn't care about me and my little cash practice on the side. Yeah. But I had this job that took the pressure off. I didn't have to be a used car salesman to get people in the door of my clinic, which is what I never wanted to do. So my cash-based clinic didn't have to keep the lights on for me. So my point is, and you figure that out however you want to do that, but my point is identify your passion, but then foster it in a very non-pressurized manner in the beginning. Because especially for new grads, you're worried about not killing somebody. You're stressing out about the loans that you're like has now hit you. It's like, oh my goodness, now I'm not in school anymore. I'm gonna have to start paying these back and all these things. Maybe you have a young family, these types of things. So you identify your passions, don't make them your they don't make them the bread and butter of your revenue streams are trying to do that right away. Foster that stuff more slowly over time. And the way that you can do that is you can make connections. You know, people will ask, how do I do workshops at gyms? I really want to do workshops at local gyms in the area. Well, have you reached out to them? Not really. Okay. Well, you start to make connections on the weekend. So you've got free time or on your off days, go and meet people and throw ideas at them. You know, you're working on the side, you could do a workshop for free. But that you, now you're starting to build a little bit. You're starting to make connections. Now you've got a whole group of people looking at you who know who you are now in the community. You've got some leads, these types of things. So I think looking back on my experience, I pressurized myself sometimes a little bit too soon. I got antsy and I didn't create a foundation of the idea or project right from the jump. I just put it out there. This is what we're going to do. And then people know about it. And then it takes me a long time to follow up and actually get it going. Right. And the interest has fallen off at that point. It's gotten cold. So that's my biggest thing is don't pressurize yourself. Don't put yourself under a bunch of pressure in the beginning to start making money in a cash-based practice or to work with only athletes, these types of things. Work into things very slowly and just kind of chip away. And still that human connection is really, really important.
Well, man, that's great advice. You know, if people want to follow what you guys are doing and get involved in Clinical Athlete, what's the best place for them to go and find information on that?
Yeah, it's super easy. Our website, clinicalathlete.com, we're going to be launching a new website here and hopefully in the next month. So there's an example in the next month. If it's been 3 months and Clinical Athlete website hasn't changed, there you go.
I'll hold you accountable. I'll be your accountability partner on that.
I appreciate you. Yeah. Exactly. And Instagram, our email is just info@clinicalathlete.com. So if you want to shoot us an email, a question about anything, and if it's directed towards me, that email will get forwarded to me and I'll read that. But you can, shoot us a message on Facebook, Instagram, the website, email is perfectly fine.
All right. That's it, guys, man. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad somebody finally got to tease out all the business advice living inside you. Dude, it was awesome. I really, really had a good time chatting with you. And as always, guys, we'll catch you next time.
Hey, I just want to say thanks for listening to today's show. If you liked what you heard and you're interested in seeing if you're a fit to work with us, here's what I want you to do next. Head over to physicaltherapybiz.com/call. That's physicaltherapybiz.com/call and book an appointment to speak with our team today. We'll jump on the phone with you for about 45 minutes and we'll get you crystal clear on 3 things in your business. Number 1, what price should you be charging? Number 2, what target audience should you be going after? And number 3, what strategies should you be using to reach those people? Remember, scaling your cash PT business doesn't happen by itself. You need expert guidance to make it happen. We've helped cash PT owners all over the country scale to multiple 6-figure businesses, all while creating huge impact in their communities. To see if we can help you do the same thing, head over to physicaltherapybiz.com/call. I'm Danny Matei, and let's talk soon.